paying American farmers during this trade war. I'm David Brancaccio. The Trump administration announced more cash for farmers and ranchers hit by higher tariffs, bringing the total over the past year to $28 billion. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
The aid package will include $14.5 billion to be paid directly to producers. Mitchell Hora is a row crop farmer in Washington County, Iowa. He says the aid program the USDA issued last fall worked pretty well.
Extremely easy. I think they had really good adoption of it. And it really helped out, helping us to survive as soybean growers.
Another $100 million of aid will go to promoting the farmers' exports. Before the trade war, more than half of America's soybean exports went to China. Not anymore. John Newton is the American Farm Bureau's chief economist.
Maybe they can find a way to make a deal with China, but if you can't make a deal with China, then we need to be over there knocking on doors around the world, find places to sell our products.
He says he knows this aid is a stopgap, but says it's not just trade policy that's putting farmers up against a wall. Mother Nature, the farmer's original business partner, has not been helpful in recent memory. From hurricanes and tornadoes to devastating flooding throughout the Farm Belt, he says it's been a tough couple of years for America's farmers. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
With news this morning that Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May will step down amid the confusion over how the UK leaves the EU, the British pound is up. A pound costs $1.27 now, with the bet some new Conservative leader this summer will bring some order to Brexit. London's FTSE index up 0.6%. S&P and Dow futures are up 0.7%. This week on Marketplace, we're exploring brain research suggesting as people get older, including those who seem fine and mentally healthy, can become more vulnerable to fraud. Today, how far should we go to protect people? Which starts with an uncomfortable truth that often it's family doing the scamming.
As to the defendant Anthony Marshall, how say you to the first count of the indictment, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
In perhaps the most famous case of an elder swindle this century, Anthony Marshall, former U.S. ambassador and Broadway producer, was found guilty of grand larceny in managing the affairs of his own mother, that victim, socialite Brooke Astor, one of New York's great philanthropists. It was her grandson, Philip Marshall, son of the man convicted, who helped expose Astor's situation.
Basically, my grandmother went from the limelight, center stage, as lead actor in her own life, to being gaslighted by her son, who psychologically broke her down into believing she was going broke.
His dad was in part convicted for giving himself a big lump sum raise in salary using Astor's money.
Well over half, and some of the research indicates it's over two-thirds of cases, are abuse imposed by family, quote-unquote friends, and caregivers.
Experts say more data are needed on what drives the exploiters, the substance-abusing adult child, the shopaholic nephew, or the person's caregiver, maybe a relative who feels entitled to the money for the love and attention they've quote-unquote invested. But as outrageous as financial abuse by family seems, how far do you really go to protect people? Because taking away rights based on age, but not necessarily competence, is discrimination. And it has a name, ageism.
Ageism is the greatest impediment to elder justice. And then when it's compounded by policies, procedures, and practices which are going to further compromise seniors, it's a huge issue.
Elder rights attorney and MacArthur Genius Award winner Marie-Thérèse Connolly has a forthcoming book called Aging Dangerously.
It raises just such complicated ethical and philosophical dilemmas about what we want our old age to look like, and to what extent should we be entitled to make bad decisions.
She says even in the name of protecting them, seniors must not be treated as second-class citizens.
We have this balancing of autonomy and safety and privacy interests that we have to do. If you make a lot of really bad decisions, assets that you need for housing or care can be gone in a flash, and we can't just sit by.
Connolly finds this idea researchers are pushing, age-associated financial vulnerability, is a useful one, but thinks we should protect everyone regardless of age. Okay, but I asked, is it really discriminatory if, say, credit card companies amped up fraud monitoring on the accounts of older people in particular?
Why only older people?
Mark Lax is the gerontologist at Weill Cornell in New York who originally came up with the financial vulnerability label. He takes no prisoners on this subject. He thinks in the name of health, safety, and quality of life, we may have to treat older people differently by giving them special attention.
I'm a geriatrician who wrote a popular book about age discrimination. I said we're supposed to let older people have autonomy in all their decisions, and how dare us infantilize older adults. But it may be that in the same way we didn't let 12-year-olds work in factories 100 years ago, that older people might need some protections to avoid age-associated financial scams.
Analogy time. In many states, older drivers have to start reporting in person to renew licenses with extra vision tests in places. Could we develop something similar to check in automatically with people and their money as they age? But earlier this week, we heard from Chad and Kelly Schreiber, who parried multiple attempts to scam money off the elderly father. Art has now granted them power of attorney to help oversee his money. Even after all that, the Schreibers do worry about protections going too far.
Is this just a bad decision, or is it somebody being taken advantage of? The idea of taking away the financial keys, that runs into personal liberties and things like that. I should have the right to make a bad decision.
But Dr. Lax is among those willing to question that, offering this among examples.
How did we let a 90-year-old enter into a complex trust and estate agreement, purchase speculative securities, without some attention to his or her cognitive performance?
Marketplace.org has practical resources on this, and listen for the one-hour special, Brains and Losses, on many public radio stations nationwide. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.